Spring Court will hear Alabama and Alabama.
Right, that's one more.
I have some notes from the debate. Johnson's against gay marriage that falls on stage. Mike Moore does not get arrested. But Roy Moore loses yet again.
Okay, so you both have a way to...
I don't care.
This is our opening music. We're not actually going out over the microphones yet.
No, but we are going out.
When this fades out, the show begins.
There's about a 2-minute delay between when stuff gets spoken or played and when they actually hear it on the internet. So we're starting 2 minutes early. And part of the reason we have 2 minutes of music is because we never know exactly what moment they'll pick us up. So we want some padding time.
This song, in case you don't recognize it, was in the first Kill Bill movie.
I saw a commercial recently, too.
It's a great little piece of music.
You
guys, is this your normal time?
Yeah. Hi, everybody, and welcome to The Nonprofits. I'm your host, Jeff D., our co-host, Dennis Louvet.
Hello.
And producer, Russell Glasser.
Hello.
Today, we are coming to you live from the Holiday Inn Town Lake Azalea Room. We're at the Texas Atheist and Agnostic Conference, hosted by the Atheist Community of Austin. We've done theme shows before, right? One time we broadcast from a former rainforest.
That's right.
But not really. That was just an audio CD. And another time we were captured by space aliens. And then we're breaking up.
That really happened.
That really happened. But we know that some people, you know, skeptical, and well, they should be. So just to prove that we're in fact here at a conference and not broadcasting from Blaster Studios, can we get a quick yeehaw from everybody out there? We have a room full of 20 some odd, 24 some odd people here at the conference, and they're going to be our live in studio audience today.
All right,
that's cool.
It has been a huge technical challenge to get us to go out over the air from
someplace
other than our normal location.
Now we get to find out whether our jokes actually elicit the laughs.
Yeah, we never get to hear that.
Yeah, instead of LOL, which we usually get in the chat.
Right. Yeah. So Russell, how have we achieved this?
Well, first of all, the 2-minute lag is up, so you'll be happy to know that we are broadcasting on the Atheist Network.
Right? All right. Woo! There's always some question. That's how we know everything actually worked.
I told somebody earlier that this requires only some technical knowledge and about $100 of equipment. I'm actually revising that up to $200 plus the computer, which you already have. What we've got here is a soundboard, which you can buy for about $60. They range, there's a range, better ones or more. We've got 3 microphones, which are actually fairly cheap. They're about $10 to $15 each.
With brand new microphone cables this week, right?
Right.
Not the old horrible crackly ones.
Yeah, well, these are cheap microphone cables too, but they've got some life in them.
They're new and cheap microphone cables.
Right.
That's the important thing.
We have a stereo here, and the software that we're using is Shoutcast. You can just search for that on Google or something. Shoutcast basically transmits our broadcast out to anyone who happens to know the address we're broadcasting on. Plus, but we can't handle a lot of connections. We can handle up to 32 connections max. So what we've got is our friends over at the Atheist Network. Hi, Reggie. Who may not be listening, but we always appreciate it. Reggie has the Atheist Network, which broadcasts 24/7 with different kinds of atheist programming, including some funny stuff from like George Carlin, Tom Likas, and a small but loyal number of pretty excellent shows, including his own. So what happens is that he picks up our broadcast, and then he rebroadcasts it out with a much higher bandwidth rate so that he can handle as many people as want to tune in.
Do we know how many people are listening live right now?
I can check. There's maybe 20, 30 in the chat room right now.
Right.
Which I didn't mention, there's a live IRC chat going on right now. So if I want to, we can get feedback because I'm always monitoring the chat room when I'm not actually talking or reading something.
Right. And the URL for Atheist Network is www.atheistnetwork.com.
Right. We also keep an archive of the last 7 shows or so. That's about 3-4 months worth. On our website, which is atheist-community.org, you just click on Nonprofits Radio Show.
Right.
On the link. And did I leave anything out?
I don't know.
Oh, please, no.
You're the technical guy. You would know.
Well, I mean, stuff goes wrong with this show all the time. I've got this big checklist of last-minute stuff, and we've made every possible mistake during the 4 years that we've been on, including not broadcasting live, not recording the show, and sometimes doing neither, in which we all sit around for an hour and a half and talk to ourselves. But
that was a great episode, though.
But by now, we're all hands at it.
Yeah.
So things hardly ever go wrong, and amazingly, things seem to be going okay today.
This isn't
feedback.
Even our regular computer, right? Is this a this
right.
is a laptop?
I borrowed this laptop on Tuesday.
Uh-huh. Installed all the software, got that all working. Had
right.
to work with the people here at the hotel.
Yeah, I had to call technical support for their internet connection. So I'm sure this is all fascinating.
Well, you know, we don't usually talk about the nuts and bolts, that part of the nuts and bolts. We talk about when things go wrong, because I think
right.
it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But we don't usually talk about how you do this, but here we're in front of an audience of representatives from other atheist groups all around the great state of Texas, and we've gotten a lot of questions about just how we managed to do this thing. So that's that.
Anyone have questions about it?
Yeah, good question. Anybody got questions about how we do the no hands?
Okay,
all we need is a big satellite connection, and we can do this from anywhere.
Perfect.
Maybe someday. Now, another thing that's different about this show, apart from our geographical location, is usually we don't have guests. We're not a call-in show. We don't, arrange guests over the phone. We're not actually set up for that. That would take some additional pieces of equipment to hook into a phone line so we can have callers. But today, we're in front of this audience of representatives of different atheist groups, and we have the keynote speaker for the entire conference sitting here right with us at the table, Michael Newdow.
Thank you.
Yeah. And thank you to everybody out there listening to our show. We expect that we're broadcasting to fellow atheists who are relatively up to date on what's been going on. And in case any of you, though, have been living under a rock, Michael Newdow challenged the recitation of the Pledge of Allegiance in public schools when the words "under God" were included in the pledge in California, and went all the way to the Supreme Court on that, which then punted. Is that basically? Yeah. So, we can't miss this opportunity to have a guest for our first time ever, and somebody is in our little community. My first question for you is, what have we not heard? I mean, are there any interesting tidbits that that, you know, things that happened as part of your whole effort that didn't make it into the press that people have talked about, do you think people ought to know?
I'd say the main thing is the whole ruling, which was that I didn't have sufficient standing my trial. And I always try to get every interviewer to delve into that, is why did this guy lose his legal custody of his kid? And I think that some people would be interested in that, since the whole case hinged on that.
Right.
And nobody ever probed into that question. You know, you would also think you would have heard why I lost it. I'm not speaking loud enough, so I'll try to speak louder. You would also think that, you know, the religious right after me, to some degree, after this case, and for 2 years this was in the papers, and nobody ever heard a single word about why I didn't have the legal custody of my kids, why I don't do drugs, why I don't accuse people, what's going on. And the reason I lost legal custody of my child is because I fought to get 50% time with my child. And that's the only reason.
Really?
The only thing I've ever done wrong with taking care of my child. My child loves me beyond belief. I love her beyond belief. She continually asks to have a good time with her dad, and I've been fighting and losing everything I've ever worked for the right to be in the family with my child. That's the other constitutional claim that I spent my life trying to change. So that to me is a major issue, and it's not just me. This goes on with non-custodial parents. First of all, that term non-custodial parent, I think, is deeply offensive. There's no reason when two parents are not together, they both have a fundamental constitutional right of parenthood, and they should both have equal custody as far as I'm concerned, unless you can show some harm to the child. And our states, instead of just accepting that, have created this nonsensical system that's based on nothing. There's absolutely no data. There's not a single study, not one, that has ever been created or attempted where they've shown any benefit of the system that we have. We waste incredible amounts of money. It's not the establishment clause, it's not atheism, but that's the aspect of the case that we should have gotten out there.
Well, you say that is the reason why you were, I don't know the legal term.
Digged.
was that spelled out explicitly in the Supreme Court's ruling?
What the Supreme Court said was that, it was clearly mixed. It's very interesting because it was written by the majority of opinion was written by Justice Stevens, who had previously written in another case called Lewis that the Supreme Court shouldn't in dissent because the Supreme Court had done something similar. And he said, this is terrible. He said, you know, what are you wimping out on standing bases for? We should be expanding standing. We shouldn't deprive people of rights on the basis of standing. And then he went and wrote this opinion and did exactly what he said he should do.
Right.
And the argument was that because I do have joint legal custody with the mother, but the judge in the family court said she has the final decision-making power for all key decisions. For instance, in medicine, I'm board-certified in emergency medicine. I'm on the faculty at UCLA. I have 25 years of experience. The mother, her entire knowledge of medicine goes back to the fact that she's the daughter of a woman who worked in a doctor's office. She has final decision-making power to make any decision, medical decision, for my daughter. It doesn't make much sense to me. I'm not asking for any decision-making power, but I'm asking for equal power. And the judge took that away from me and did it because I've been fighting, as I said, to be an equal parent with my child. He didn't want to be told that what he's doing is harmful and ridiculous. So, in any event, the Supreme Court said, you don't have final decision-making power, and even though this case has absolutely nothing to do with custody, I brought this case when the mother and I were both good friends. She was fully aware of this case, never said a word until the religious right got involved. Used her to their credit, the religious right did a great job. They did it. They accomplished their goal. Their goal was to overturn the Ninth Circuit, and they did it. And they did it by saying, by getting the mother involved. They flew her the week after the decision came out with the Ninth Circuit. They flew her round trip from Sacramento to Washington, D.C., put her up in the Four Seasons in Washington, D.C. That flight alone was $25,000. She went by private jet. I think I spent total $5,000 in the entire case, going from the beginning to the Supreme Court. They spent $25,000 on somebody who wasn't a part of the case, right, just on that one trip. So you can see what they spent there.
Right.
Just her legal fees before they got Ken Starr involved was over $600,000. I mean, they spent a lot of money and they accomplished their goal. They got the case overturned based on this standing issue. But I think it's totally bogus. And the Supreme Court said, and that was their reason, they said that because because the mother has final decision-making power, and it has something to do with custody, and normally we need custody issues for the states, this guy doesn't have the right to use the federal court system, which is a fundamental constitutional right in itself. He doesn't have the right to use the system to ask us to adjudicate this case. Therefore, we're trying that.
Can I ask, what do you think are the odds that this case will actually come to, I mean, not this case, but the situation with the pledge will come back to court in a different context?
100%, because I'm bringing it again in the Ninth Circuit on Election Day, and I will be bringing it, we have one of the members here in the audience, David Croft, who will be a plaintiff in a case here in the Fifth Circuit. And I have plaintiffs right now, provided they all don't, you know, one of the things is it does cost some money, it costs about $1,000 just to get each case through the district court. If the people are willing to find funding or to fund it themselves, I'll be acting as attorney, and right now I have 8 of the 11 circuits covered, and we will be bringing it in about once a month. I'm going to bring another one of these cases. And hopefully, I mean, the case is so strong, it's incredible. I mean, if you look at the principles, if you look at the case law, if you look at anything, the test that the Supreme Court has advocated, there's absolutely no way we should lose this case. I mean, it is clear, the words are under God, and they're in the middle of our Pledge of Allegiance, and they don't belong there. They were stuck in there by a special law of Congress. I mean, you can't do any of this stuff. And so I'm assuming that some federal judge somewhere, or some panel in some circuit, is going to agree in the middle of the Supreme Court. So to answer your question, the case will be brought again. I can't guarantee that all the federal judges won't out, but hopefully, you know, we have 3 or 2 in the Ninth Circuit.
Great.
Wow.
Questions? Yeah, you guys, I imagine that very few people in this room were watching the debate last night because you were all here.
I caught like the last 10 minutes of it driving home.
I watched it.
Did you?
Yeah.
And?
It was very bizarre. Bush was very loud and shrill. It was loud and shrill.
But
it was strange.
But like animate instead of just sitting there.
Oh yeah, no.
The same
the whole layout of this debate was different. They didn't have a podium, so they'd stand up and walk around and talk to an audience, which was all around them.
Uh-huh.
Which so I liked.
It was very animated. Yeah, it's very nice.
I just brought this up because you might be interested to know that the president mentioned you, not by name, but. Somebody asked the question in the room, Mr. President, if there were a vacancy in the Supreme Court and you had the opportunity to fill that position today, who would you choose and why? And his reply was, I would pick somebody who would not allow their personal opinion to get in the way of the law. I would pick somebody who would strictly interpret the Constitution of the United States. Let me give you a couple of examples, I guess, of the kind of person I wouldn't pick. I wouldn't pick a judge who said that the Pledge of Allegiance couldn't be said in a school because it had the words under God in it. So in effect, first he says I wouldn't pick somebody who would let their personal opinion get in the way of the law. And then he went on to explain how he would pick someone who would let their personal opinion get in the way of the law.
I'm actually upset that he didn't mention it because he's invited me to the White House many times.
Really?
Yeah. No, I turned it down. I did this.
Are you serious?
Okay. Right. Turn down an invite to the White House. Wow.
Younger bedroom.
Yeah. Okay. Well. So you've got. You're lining up plaintiffs to bring this case.
Yeah. Let me just say too. Actually, there's only 2 circuits that I don't have.
Yeah.
At least the probable.
Oh. Yeah.
So that's the D.C. circuit. So if anyone knows anyone. The D.C. Circuit, and the other is the 6th Circuit, which is Ohio, and the states around there. So if anybody was in those 6th or 8th, if you're in 6th or the 8th, actually I think it's the 8th, which is the Midwest, like Dakotas and stuff like that. If anyone is in the 8th Circuit and is willing to be a plaintiff, try to, and their children are in the public schools, resetting the pledge and come up with an idea.
How would they go about doing that for your website?
The website, yeah. To restore the pledge.com.
Cool. More questions. Questions from the audience.
Right.
Why don't we just repeat them?
Yeah.
Okay. Easier that way.
microphones around.
There have been any number of challenges since 54 when that happened. Would you be able to give us a very, very brief recount of what those were and reassure us that whatever precedents were set in those cases would not affect your cases?
Yeah, the question is the past cases, the challenges for the Pledge of Allegiance. Justice O'Connor actually uses that in her decision. It's Justice O'Connor, in the case that Elkbrook, in my case, that I went to the Supreme Court, the way it was decided was five justices said I didn't have standing. It was interesting because those justices are the ones who generally are very liberal with standing. And then three judges said I do have standing, Chief Justice Rehnquist, Justice O'Connor, and Justice Thomas. And those are the judges who are generally very parsimonious with standing. So it's completely reversed from what you'd expect. And the three justices who said I do have standing said simultaneously that the pledge is constitutional. Justice O'Connor wrote, she says it's a close call, but she's going to say it's constitutional. And one of the things, one of the reasons, she gave a whole bunch of reasons, which, from my mind, from my looking at it, those reasons are the very reason we have an establishment clause. One of the things she said, though, is that it's been so few people who've brought this case, that therefore it doesn't really bother people much. It makes as much sense as to
so
say,
so that's
an
open invitation to bring more of
well,
cases.
I mean, so I'm going to have, at least eight cases within the next year to show that that's hardly the case. It's also, she said there were only two that she was aware of. In fact, there were three. She left out the first one, which was Joseph Lewis did a challenge within 2 years at the time the pledge was changed with under God. And he brought it in state court in New York, and the state court threw it out, so it's patriotic. The next case was Smith v. Denny, a case in California. And if you look through it, it's all built on, it's a house of cards. Somebody says, well, this looks like it's okay, and then somebody says, oh, look, they said it was okay, and when they didn't say it was okay, they said, no, it looks like okay, and their reasoning was focused. And that's what happened in Smith v. Denny. And then in 1992, there was a case called Sherman, which was in Illinois. Rob Sherman brought a case. He lost, and then that was just, they brought the case just before Lee versus Weiss, the coercion case involving high school prayer, graduations was brought. And so they didn't have the benefit of the statements that were made in Lee versus Weiss. And that was in the Seventh Circuit. And you read the opinion, and it's such a ridiculous opinion. I mean, they just ignore all of the tests, all of the lines, just say it's okay. So there were three cases that I'm aware of that were brought. I don't think there were any others. And then my case came. I don't think those precedents are at all strong. They weren't really brought up during the course of my case. And again, the main case that was ruled, that was used by the Ninth Circuit to say that the pledge wasn't constitutional, was Lee versus Weissman, which hadn't been decided for any of those cases yet. So that's the latter. And Justice Thomas, I might add, in his concurrence or dissent, depending on how you characterize it, in the pledge case that went to the Supreme Court, Justice Thomas said, hey, if you look at Lee versus Weissman, if you look at everything that we've said as the Supreme Court, this is unconstitutional. So he ruled against me because he contends that the Establishment Clause was never incorporated, under the 14th Amendment. All of the other, most of the other clauses of the Bill of Rights have been incorporated. Even though they were addressed only to the federal government, we've incorporated them with the 14th Amendment to apply to the state governments. And he says the Establishment Clause is different. It's not an individual right, even though it's sitting in the middle of the Bill of Rights. And he says that and to some degree he's correct. I don't want to completely disregard you. The Establishment Clause was, to a large degree, actually probably exclusively at that time, to protect the states from having the government infringe with an establishment, because most of the states had established religions at the time. So he said this was not something that should have been incorporated. I would say it wasn't a Bill of Rights because it is a fundamental right. It's a fundamental right, individual, of the citizens of this nation to not have the government advocate for a religion that they don't adhere to and be turned into outsiders, as Justice O'Connor has repeatedly stated. So I would say it's very much, and as atheists, I think we all know that there is a tremendous stigma to be an atheist in America, and that is perpetuated by the government when it continually tells people, hey, we're a nation under God, in God we trust, God save the United States, and so on the court, start off every session with prayers to God. You are telling everybody, real Americans believe in God, and you other people will tolerate you, but you're not the real thing. And I think we have a right not to have our government say that.
We have another question, Don Black.
Yeah, you're controversial within the atheist community for holding the stance that atheism is a religion. Would you care to comment on that?
Sure. I think...
I wouldn't take the question.
Sorry, the question is atheism a religion? And many atheists don't like that thought. Atheism is not belief in God. I would certainly agree with that. I think belief in God is, like most of us, a mythology that is based on nothing except people wanting to believe things. And I certainly would adhere to the view that atheism denies that sort of view, that you know, we believe in reason and evidence and everything else. However, when we're talking in the legal field, when we're talking about the Constitution, if we say we're not a religion, we are taken out of the purview of the First Amendment. It says, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's talking about religion. And if we say we're not within that realm, then the argument that has been used, that you're not a religion and therefore this doesn't apply to you, is correct. And we have no standing to go and say, you guys are violating our religious freedoms. I don't want that. I am a religion, and it depends what you characterize religion, how you define religion. Right? There are many definitions. Some people say a religion requires belief in God. Clearly, under that definition, atheism is not a religion. But constitutionally, religion pertains to everything that has to do with this whole realm of religion, which includes belief in God, including the non-belief of God. And the Supreme Court has said that as well. It will protect irreligion as opposed to religion, belief in God, disbelief in God. All of those things fall into this rubric of religion constitutionally. And I want to make sure I'm incorporated in that. I want to say that, yes, this is my religious view, which is that God does not exist. It's just as important and deserves just as much respect as your religious view that God does exist. And in those terms, atheism clearly has to be a religion. Otherwise, we're shooting ourselves in the foot, saying, hey, we're not protected, and I won't be protected. And so the idea, again, is, does the government of the United States have an obligation to respect every American's religious views, including the atheist's religious views? And it doesn't make sense to say we have religious views about something that's not a religion. That seems paradoxical. That's been my argument and my stance, and I think if you don't hold that stance, you're setting yourself up to lose the protections that I think you deserve.
It's certainly true that there are things out there that are undeniably religions that don't have gods, right? Like Buddhism.
Right. And the Supreme Court said that. As a matter of fact, there's a case called Torcaso, which is a 1961 case. They had a law like Texas has a law, by the way. I don't know if you guys are all aware of Article 1, Section 4 that says that we believe there should be no religious test, but if you want to hold public office, you have to acknowledge the existence of a supreme being. It's in your constitution.
Right. My understanding is that was challenged. It was agreed that it was not enforceable, but they just stopped short of actually removing it.
And I plan, and if David and the other plaintiff that I have for the Fifth Circuit agree, I will be including that in the pledge case. I'm going to ask for an injunction to have that removed.
That's right.
Because that is an offense, and it is, you know, it's a violation of equal protection, it's a violation of the Establishment Clause, it's a violation of our free exercise rights, or the Texans, atheists' free exercise rights, to be able to go and live in our society without government telling you that you are religious people as well. So, who was I?
We were talking about
Torcaso, thank you. Yeah. So, and that's correct, what this has to do. So in 1961, in Maryland, they had a similar clause. They still have a similar clause that says you can't hold public office unless you acknowledge the existence of the Supreme Being. And that was challenged, and the Supreme Court said in that case that our Constitution protects all religions, those that believe in God and those that hold the belief that God does not exist. Right. And so that's actually written into the opinion. And again, that follows that idea that they're seeing atheism as a religion, although they didn't mention atheism.
Something we've talked about on the show in the past is how they defend these things as ceremonial deism, right? They say, well, it's just ceremony. It's not really violating the Constitution instead. So it's not really violating the Constitution because it doesn't mean anything. So what we've said in the past, and I think Amanda actually brought this up at one point, was why don't we have ceremonial racism?
I actually have that same argument on my briefs. They said ceremonial gender bias or ceremonial desires. Yeah. That whole idea too. You know, if this is just ceremonial, it doesn't mean anything, right? That's why Congress just passed the Pledge Protection Act. I mean, it's a separate congressional act, right, to address this thing that doesn't mean anything. That's why it was on the front page, because it doesn't mean anything. That's why 99 senators decided. As far as I'm aware, that's never ever happened. The only time Congress, as far as I know, left their chambers to go out on the steps of the Capitol was in sympathy of 9/11. Aside from that, the only other time I'm aware of was when the Ninth Circuit ruled in my favor with a pledge. They did that because this was just ceremonial and doesn't mean anything?
Not only is it absurd to suggest that it doesn't mean anything, but it's absurd to suggest that even if it did mean something, that the fact that it's merely ceremonial is somehow less offensive.
Right. One of my arguments is that the fact that it has become ceremonial, to me, that's the definition of an establishment. We've made it so much incorporated as part of our society. We've established the monotheism in this country. So that in itself is like an admission of the violation.
Are there more questions? Yeah, the other Don.
Should you win, and I certainly hope you do, but the next one, what do you think the chances are? I've heard a lot of talk about a constitutional amendment to overturn a possible Supreme Court judgment.
The question is a very good one and very real. If in fact this does get to the Supreme Court rules in our favor, says that yes, under God is religious and shouldn't be in a pledge of allegiance, will there be a constitutional amendment? The ACLU says yes, there will. It says that it will be passed. I have more faith in the American public, maybe I shouldn't. But I think that the polls that they always ask, they said, do you want under God to stay in the Pledge of Allegiance? 90% of the population says yes. They never ask the question, do you think government should be involved in religious belief? And I think that hopefully 90% of the population will say no. And if they understand this case for what it stands for, that it protects them as much as atheism. This isn't a pro-atheism stance that I'm thinking. This is a pro-establishment stance. And if they understand that the reason we have the religious diversity in America that we have, which exceeds that of any other nation, the reason we have these freedoms is because we have strictly upheld the establishment laws. I think, hopefully, the American people will understand that they don't need this. The reason that they have all these churches out there is because we've said that government's staying out of this business. And I have more faith in our public than either is warranted or other people have.
We have another question, Alan.
I just have a comment, which is that back in 1989, when the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that flag burning was unconstitutional, there was a lot of talk at the time then about passing an amendment.
Rules against
Alan is reminding us of a case where ruled in favor of flag burning as an expression of free speech.
Right.
And there was talk of an amendment of a constitutional amendment to prevent flag burning then, and that didn't go.
That's exactly right.
Right. Well, maybe your faith in American public is justified.
That case, by the way, was written also by Justice Stevens. Justice Stevens is a hero for us in terms of the establishment. He's been the staunchest advocate, but every once in a while, he was also a hero for free speech, but he was the one who wrote a key dissent in Texas v. Johnson, saying that the flag is something separate and you shouldn't be allowed to burn it. He could conceivably rule against us in the flag time. I had always said, if I were there when they announced the case, that I'd argue, they said Justice Stevens will read the opinion of the court, I'm going to be celebrating, because that was what I envisioned. He would be writing this opinion saying, we need to keep under God. And I'm glad I wasn't there, because I would have gone from very high to very low very quickly. Because he was the guy who wrote the opinion who said that I don't understand.
Are there more questions? There was another one. Yes, ma'am.
Would you please tell us what the result has been as far as getting threats and intimidation and that sort of thing, and what you have done to protect yourself? And how the people you work with treat you since this has happened?
The question is the threats that I've gotten and how people I work with treat me. People I work with treat me great because I work by myself and I really treat myself. So that works out okay. As far as threats, when the case first broke, I knew I was going to win this case. I it was an interesting oral argument before the Ninth Circuit. And I had hoped to get, there's a Justice Reinhardt, who was pretty clear from what he had written that he'd be on my side. There's about 30 justices in the Ninth Circuit, and you get three in a three-judge panel, so I had about a 10% chance I'd get him, and luckily I got him. And then I got two other judges that I didn't know anything about. And one of them was Judge Goodwin, and in the middle of the oral argument, he asked me some question, which I answered something or other. And all of a sudden he started saying, yeah, I remember when they put this in. He says, I didn't understand how they were allowed to do it back then. I got two. That's it. I'm in. So I knew I was going to win. Plus the law is still on my side. Yeah. So I actually went out, and my normal phone is not listed in my name. And so I actually went out and got another phone line to put in my house to list in my name, because I knew people were going to be looking for me, so I'll make it easy for them. And the phone just rang nonstop for like 3 days. It just continually rang.
Yeah,
mostly people, with some vitriolic messages and stuff. And somewhat, I don't really consider them threats. I think it was just mostly venting. I actually have one of my songs on my CD.
I was going to say, you played your song on our show.
It's a good song. I thank those people for giving me that for $5.
And if people are looking for your CD, that's also on your
website. And so, in any event, the threats, I don't, there were a couple things. I have a swing in my front yard my daughter plays on, and that was cut. Whether it was related to this or not, I don't know. Probably not. I also had a punctured tire. Whether or not that was roadhead, it was on the side wall, which makes me somewhat suspicious, but no one left a message or anything. I did get some things that were actual threats to some degree, but their deadlines have passed. I'm still alive, so I think it's mostly dangerous.
I know you have a message board at your site, restorethepledge.com. Do you ever actually go there?
The guys who put this together were really great. They did a great job, and really help a lot. They try to get me to do that. I'm just so far behind. If I start in there, I know it'll be like hours that are lost. So I apologize to people who do sign on. And I do look every once in a while when Anthony bothers me enough. But it's not that I don't want to. It's just that I'm so far behind.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was going there regularly for a couple of weeks, and boy, that place is overrun with trolls.
Which is fine. Get their views too sometimes.
You offered to do the first half hour of our show, and we're past that now. You're welcome to stay around and respond to news items with us, or go off and do your own.
We'll prepare for this evening.
Okay. Great. So you're going to do the presentation tonight at 7 o'clock to the Vulcan. Well, thank you very, very much. Well, we have a choice now. We can either go back to our regular format of reading some news and yakking it up, or we can go through more of the people here at the conference that have been making presentations to other atheist groups here in Texas. You want to vote?
Why don't we do 10, 15 minutes of news and
all right.
Take a couple of guests?
Okay, great.
They've agreed to come, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
we're not going to ambush
anybody. I phrase it more in the form of a warning. if they came to listen to the show, they might be called upon to speak. Dennis, why don't you start us off with some news?
All right, let's see here.
What's happening up there?
Oh gosh, what's good for this? Yes, speaking of the Supreme Court.
Uh huh.
This one they didn't punt.
By the way, Mike Newdow is now getting a gold star from the chat room. They liked him.
But let's see. Supreme Court won't hear Alabama Ten Commandments case.
Yay.
Washington AP. The Supreme Court rejected an appeal Monday from ousted Alabama Chief Justice Roy Moore, who lost his job after defying a federal order to dismantle a Ten Commandments monument. Moore has become a high-profile crusader for the Ten Commandment Monument as a result of the dispute over his 2.5-ton granite display in the state courthouse. A federal judge ruled that Moore violated the Constitution's ban on government promotion of religion when he placed the monument in the rotunda of the judicial building in the middle of the night in 2001.
Yeah, accompanied by a film crew sent by a televangelist.
Mm-hmm. Gee, in the middle of the night, you think he knew he was doing something wrong? The display was moved last year.
You know, for the documentary that they made and sold on this televangelist's program, maybe just better.
Just for money.
You know, for dramatic purposes.
Right, the lighting and it. Yeah, yeah.
It's an artistic decision.
The display was moved last year over Moore's objections, duh, and a state court removed him from office. Yay!
Also over his objections.
Yeah, I would imagine so. Moore's lawyer had called the Supreme Court to remedy this travesty of justice and give him his job back. The High Court declined without comment. The Alabama Court of the Judiciary found that Moore violated canons of judicial ethics when he refused the federal court's order to move the monument. Moore could try to win back a seat on the court in 2006 elections. That's it.
So the Supreme Court, he appealed to the Supreme Court, and they said, no.
Yeah, they didn't even talk to him.
Great.
Go away.
I'd say I always blow it.
Yeah.
That's good. Russell,
this is a different kind of funding.
And thus, we have some more discussion about that. Roy Moore, you said pretty much all there is to say about that.
Basically, the whole thing, yes.
He's been one of the greatest sources of amusement on our audio show ever since his whole story broke.
As is James Dobson.
James Dobson.
James Dobson actually does a regular radio show around the country, extremely scary one. And he was speaking to a rally in Sioux City, Iowa recently. Thousands attended the rally to hear Christian psychologist James Dobson condemn gay marriage. During the Take a Stand for Marriage rally on Sunday, Dobson, an author, radio host, and the founder of the national group Focus on the Family, talked about same-sex marriage and judicial activism. He said that 70% of the voters have shown at the polls that they don't want the government to allow same-sex marriage. Now judges are telling us that they want to redefine the definition of marriage. We say not in our lifetime, Dobson told the crowd. After his speech, Dobson fell off the 6-foot-high stage and had to have 5 stitches for a gash above his right ankle.
God has spoken.
We love it when Christians hurt themselves.
It's always God's will.
We don't like it so much when they hurt others.
No.
No. Well, I mean, we don't take pleasure in the pain of others, but we find a kind of amusing irony when something that would be taken as a sign if it happened to the other side happens to them.
Yeah, wasn't it the last show we had the story of the woman in Italy that was crushed by a cross that fell
crushed
on her?
Crushed by a cross. Doesn't get more ironic than that.
You wonder how people can continue to believe their things that they believe if... when events like that happen. I mean, I'm sure she had a very nice funeral, and the pastor said what a wonderful lady she was, instead of, well, clearly she was evil and God wanted her dead.
And, of course, we always like to bring up the guy who played Jesus in The Passion of the Christ, allegedly getting hit by lightning.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, well, here's a little more lunacy. Jerusalem. Greek Orthodox and Franciscan priests got into a fist fight Monday. That's story's from the 27th, so that's a week ago Monday. At the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, Christianity's holiest shrine, after arguing over whether a door in the basilica should be closed during a procession.
Wow.
Closed. Open. Closed. Open. Dozens of people, including several Israeli police officers, were slightly hurt in the brawl at the shrine, built over the spot where tradition says Jesus was crucified and buried.
Wow.
And not engaged in a fistfight. 4 priests were detained. Police spokesman Shmulek Ben Ruby said. Custody of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre is shared by several denominations that jealously guard territory and responsibilities under a fragile deal hammered out over the last centuries. In centuries, they have not been able to hammer out a deal that would prevent simple fist fights.
Wow. Impressive.
Any perceived encroachment on one group's turf can lead to vicious feuds, sometimes lasting hundreds of years. Wasn't there a movie, The Big Brawl? It was like about a huge fist fight that
yeah.
went everywhere. They could make another. They could
oh my
The Big Brawl 2 about this.
They don't even realize how damning of religion as a whole that is.
Monday's fight broke out during a procession of hundreds of Greek Orthodox worshippers commemorating the 4th century pilgrimage by Helena, mother of Emperor Constantine, to Jerusalem. Tradition says that during the trip, Helena found the cross on which Jesus had been crucified.
She's just lying around there.
Excuse me, husband. I say, what's this piece of wood sticking out of the ground? I don't know. Give it a tug. Why, it's a cross. It's got bits of Jesus on it! Church officials, speaking on condition of anonymity, said that at one point, because they're so used to the whole...
honesty thing.
Well, yeah. I was going to say the confessional.
Ah, yes.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll tell you what we know, but only if we're in a box with this, like, grill, and then we can speak to you from another box. The procession passed a Roman Catholic chapel, and priests from both sides started arguing over whether the door to the chapel should be open or closed. Club-wielding Israeli riot police broke up the fight.
Wow! All right.
Wow, that's such a visual.
You know, I love the reason, the door open or the door closed. It's the kind of reasons you hear on Cops, you know, for...
Yeah,
brawls and stuff. It's like,
I said I should leave the toilet seat up, and she said, Greek Orthodox priests dressed in black robes and donning elaborate headdresses marched out of the church as bells rang loudly, carrying gold staves and roses. They marched through the church courtyard and down a narrow stone alley as Greek Orthodox Christians clapped and cheered. And then apparently there was a fist fight.
Surprised they didn't use those golden staves.
I actually have another story about a fight.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Go for it.
And segue. I can't pass up a good segue.
Oh, wait, hold it. There's one fight.
Go for it.
Capper to this. A year earlier, the Greek patriarch and Armenian clergyman designated to enter the tomb at this church, exchanged blows over a dispute over who would be the first to exit the chamber.
After you.
When a fight breaks out over who's going to leave a tomb first, so that evokes horror movies to me.
The tomb is opening, let's get out of here! Me first, no me!
Russell?
Yeah, well, there was another fight, this one related to a debate, but also spurred by religion.
Yeah.
This was on October 1st. After watching the presidential debate Thursday night, two UNC students ended up slapping each other while fighting over who Jesus would vote for in the election.
Slapping.
According to police reports, we can't make this stuff up. You know, we've got an awfully violent show since Newdale left. According to a police report, the concept of turning the other cheek came up, and James Robert Austin, 19, of 1305, won't be
it's turned into throwing the other fist.
Slapped Robert Brooks on the cheek. Wow.
Did he turn the other
one? Oh.
Slapping the other cheek.
After that, Roland slapped Austin, and Austin landed on the concrete patio, possibly striking his head, according to the report. Roland's called for an ambulance, which took Austin to UNC hospitals to be examined. Neither Roland nor Austin want to pursue the matter further.
Wow. That's impressive. And these people, well, not these people, but the priests that
yeah.
they claim to have the lock on morality.
So. Well, yeah, their job is to tell people, you know, how to live, and clearly they do.
Because lots of people fight.
And remember, unlike Islam, Christianity is a religion of peace.
That's right.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. All right, let's have a guest up here, shall we?
Yeah.
And we'll go just, you know, in order of the appearance of these folks here at the conference. So, Ariel Toman? Toman? Is that right?
Toman.
I'll get it straight one of these days. Hi, how are you? Ariel Toman was born and raised in Argentina. He's a physician and military veteran and has the official atheist dog tags to prove it. You're going to have to rattle those.
All right.
These are the ones that I actually wore on active duty.
Yeah. Did you have to specially request them, or was it?
No, they just tell you what you want on them, and I put on atheist. And it was my luck never to have to be in a punchhole, but that's what I would have worn.
Close enough. He's the vice president of Humanists of Houston, a group that he and his wife were founding members of in 1978. And he gave a presentation here at the conference about the Fugio currency, which was the first currency issued by the...
First, it was issued by the Continental Congress a few months before the Declaration of Independence, and it was issued again in 1787, a few months before the Constitution, and basically the same design both times.
Right, so clearly a many-year gap between the first and second issuing this they had decided what they wanted the money to look like, and,
right.
and they went ahead and did that, and then did it again.
Yeah.
Now, that's not going to be possible to do your whole presentation. You had this great chart with showing the lifespans of the signers of the Declaration of Independence and of the Constitution, and when these changes to our currency and other things came about, showing that, well, no, this money was what they... This money was represented what they thought our currency should be like, right? And what's on it?
What really prompted me to start this was a book that I happened to find, which talked about the future currency and how one particular motto was used instead of "In God We Trust," which came later. And that wording kind of confused me. Having to say something is just instead of something that didn't exist yet. That kind of got me going. But to make that particular part of the long story short, the founding fathers in 1776 and again in 1787 said, these are the three mottos we want in our currency. One of them is, in English, is we are one. The other two, first is the word fugio, which in Latin means I flee, and it is displayed on the coin and the bills together with the sun shining on a sundial. Because the sun shining on a dial means time, the word I flee, put these together means time flies.
Right.
Symbolically represented. And the third motto, which supposedly was proposed by Benjamin Franklin, and this is the one that really caught my eye, and this is the one that the book mentioned specifically that got me started. The third motto is, mind your business.
Oh, that sounds like Ben Franklin.
I like it.
Yeah. And I think that's a very appropriate motto for this day and age. So that got me started looking at who were these people, why did they say that, what else did they do, and how come we got all this other stuff being thrown at us by these Johnny-come-lately history revisionists. And that's where I have a graphic representation for.
And you have a website where that you said was
still
under construction.
Under construction. Part of it is already available as far as seeing the chart, but it's far from complete. My son is doing it for me, and he's my beloved personal nerd, and it just so happens he can only do so much.
Well, can we share the web address with our listeners?
Yeah.
Because they can go there now and see some of it and keep coming back and more content.
Yeah, it's www.fugio.com. 1776-Fugio, that's spelled FUGIO-1787.com.
Okay. Huh. Yeah, that was a fascinating thing. I've never heard of that currency.
Yeah.
That's like I say, there was a happenstance, as I mentioned this morning. You know, I went to a half-price bookstore, and God, in His infinite wisdom, had me just pick out this book off the shelf, and in His infinite wisdom, had me open it to that page, and the world will never be the same again.
Well, that's fascinating evidence to support, you know, what most of us are aware of, but a lot of religious people are not. That, well, no, this nation was not founded to be Christian.
That's exactly right. That's the gist of my whole presentation and this chart and the historical timelines that I show on it. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. It was a fascinating presentation. Thank you very much. You had a question and answer session already this morning. Yeah. Any further questions? Anything anybody want to ask on the air?
Anything from the chat room?
There's one.
Why do you think they adopted time flies as a motto?
Yeah. The question is, why do you think they adopted time flies as a motto?
What I have found is that probably the three mottos may have been suggested by a very eminently practical, down-to-earth, creative genius by the name of Benjamin Franklin. And basically the man was saying, let's get on with what we have to do. Other than that, I don't have any direct connections to Benjamin Franklin.
Well, okay, we're going to move on to the next guest. Thanks very, very much. Our next guest is Gibson Arnold. Is Gibson here? There you are. An atheist activist for about 20 years. He first joined the Houston chapter of American Atheists in 1983 and is now vice president of the Houston Atheist Society. He's just finished a book about, or entitled, Atheist and Freethought History in Houston?
Yeah.
Right. And Gibson, welcome to the program.
Good to be here. Thank you for having the program.
Thank you very much. Again, you know, it's sort of awkward doing this because most of the people in the live audience have heard your presentations already, but could you just, for our radio audience, give us a quick recap of some of the stuff that you found in your research?
Well, I just became fascinated that there's so much atheist and free thought history in Texas. All my life, I was born and raised here, and everything I was taught as a child growing up led me to believe that this was, you know, just a very religious state always. And it just never really was that way. The War of Independence, the Texas War of Independence from Mexico, was to some degree an anti-clerical rebellion, because there were Protestants and there were deists and other anti-clerical types who did not want their new homeland to be a Catholic theocracy. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of European immigrants who came in, like the Germans, the Czechs, and Scandinavians. A lot of them were freethinkers. The whole freethought movement was a popular movement, starting with the Enlightenment and later on towards the Victorian era. And so Texas was a part of that. That Texas was a new frontier area during this freethought growth. And so we saw a lot of people coming to Texas who were sort of fierce independent types. And then by the time of the mid and late 1800s, we had a good number of what I call free thought preachers. They weren't affiliated with any of the churches. They either didn't believe, or they were agnostics who traveled around, usually on railroad from from city to city, town to town, giving free thought lectures, and some of them built little free thought halls, and they published free thought publications. There was a fellow out of Paris, Texas, named Colonel R. Peterson, who published a newspaper he called Common Sense, which was taken after Thomas Paine's pamphlet. And there was a fellow, James Dixon Shaw, who published a newspaper called The Independent Pulpit. And these people were real free thinkers. They promoted freedom of thought. They were critical of organized religion, critical of Christianity. They pointed out the contradictions in the Bible and all that sort of stuff. And I feel it's important for us to know that in order to expose the lie that is being told that somehow we're not true Americans or we're not true Texans, you know.
Right, right.
If we're born here, we have citizenship by birthright. But not only that, we have a heritage, and a very interesting one, and we have contributed throughout the past. Non-believers, doubters, questioners have contributed a lot to our culture.
Yeah. You mentioned Robert Ingersoll during your talk,
yes.
How you came across evidence that that Ingersoll came to Texas and
right.
is here.
I didn't find it in a biography. I got a biography, and I looked, and there was nothing about Texas or any of the towns in Texas, but I had a collection of the letters of Robert Ingersoll, and one thing that he did while traveling around was very often writing his to children and his wife. On one occasion, he wrote his children scolding them, telling them, "You shouldn't be so nice. You don't have to be nice in order for me. I'll still love you anyway." He was that kind of a guy, you know, and he'd say where he was at and where he was going next. And so he wrote a letter to his kids from Galveston one time. I figured, well, if he was in Galveston, he probably came to Houston. So I went to the local archive and I looked in the newspaper, and there was an advertisement for his speech at the Sweeney and Coombs Opera House in 1898, giving is why I'm an agnostic speech. And the people loved it. You know, the newspaper article right there, it said,